So the business of keeping our observations and evaluations separate is one of the three components of learning how to express what's alive in us. A second component I'd like to focus on now is how to express clearly our feelings at any given moment. Because it's our feelings and our needs which we'll look at next, after the feelings. Those two together, feelings and needs, are the best way I've ever learned to connect with the life in myself and other people. There's a poem that I resonate to called The Mask. Unfortunately, I've forgotten who wrote it. But this poem helps me become conscious of how many of us go around without a language of life. We don't know how to say what's going on inside, what we're feeling, what we're needing. And how sad that is when all we know how to do is express alienating thoughts. The poem goes like this. Always a mask held in the slim hand whitely. Always she had a mask before her face. Truly the wrist holding it lightly fitted the task. Sometimes, however, was there a shiver, fingertip quiver, ever so slightly, holding the mask? For years and years and years I wondered, but dared not ask. And then I blundered. I looked behind the mask to find nothing. She had no face. She had become merely a hand holding a mask with grace. So many of us going around as nice, dead people, because we have been taught a language of domination that makes us moment by moment worrying about what people think we are. Do they think I'm normal, abnormal, kind, unkind, attractive, unattractive? And the more we occupy ourselves at that level, the less we're connected to the life within ourselves, to our human emotions. Psychoanalyst Rollo May suggests that the mature person becomes able to differentiate feelings into as many nuances, strong and passionate experiences, or delicate and sensitive ones, as in the different passages of music in a symphony. For many of us, however, our ability to express feelings, as Rollo May describes it, is limited, like notes in a bugle call. Our repertoire of words for calling people names is much larger, usually, than our vocabulary of words that allow us to clearly describe what's alive in us, our emotional state. I went through 21 years of American schools, and I can't recall at any time being asked how I felt. Feelings were simply not considered important. What was valued was, in quotes, the right way to think, end quotes, as defined by those who held positions of rank and authority. Too often in my experience, we are trained to be other-directed rather than to be in contact with ourselves. We learn to be up in our head wondering, what is it that others think is right for me to say and do? An interaction I had with a teacher when I was about 9 years old demonstrates how alienation from our feelings can begin. Once I was hiding in a classroom after school was over. It was an hour and a half after school was over. And I was hiding because there were a group of students outside that wanted to punish me because I was Jewish. A teacher found me hiding in the classroom, and she was surprised to see a student still in the school an hour and a half after school was over. She didn't know I was trying to outwait those that were waiting outside for me. And she said, "What are you doing in here? Get out. You're not supposed to be in school this late." And I said, "Those boys outside are waiting to beat me up." She says, "But school is over. You have to go out now." I said, "But I'm afraid." And she said, "Boys don't get afraid." A few years later, I received further reinforcement of this kind of thinking through my participation in athletics. It was typical for coaches to value athletes willing to give their all and continue playing no matter how much physical pain they were in. I learned the lesson so well, I once continued playing baseball for a month with an untreated broken wrist. At a nonviolent communication workshop, a college student spoke about a roommate who played the stereo so loudly it kept him awake. When I asked him to express how he felt when this happened, the student replied, "I feel it isn't right to play music so loud at night." I pointed out that when he followed the word feel with the word that, he was expressing an opinion but not revealing his feelings. I asked him to try again to express his feelings. He responded, "I feel when people do something like that, it's evidence of a personality disturbance." I explained that to me this was still an opinion rather than what he was feeling. He paused thoughtfully and then announced with vehemence, "I don't have any feelings about it." The student obviously had strong feelings. Unfortunately, he didn't know how to become aware of them or to express them. This difficulty in identifying and expressing feelings is common. And in my experience, especially so among lawyers, engineers, police officers, corporate managers, career military personnel, people whose professional codes discourage them from manifesting emotions. For families, the toll is severe when members are unable to communicate emotions. Country and Western singer Reba McEntire wrote a song after her father's death and titled it, "The Greatest Man I Never Knew." In so doing, she undoubtedly expressed the sentiments of many people who were never able to establish the emotional connection they would have liked with people in their families. I regularly hear statements like, "I wouldn't want you to get the wrong idea. I'm married to a wonderful man, but I never know how he's feeling." One such dissatisfied woman brought her spouse to a workshop, during which she told him, "I feel like I'm married to a wall." The husband then did an excellent imitation of a wall. He sat mute. Exasperated, she turned to me and said, "See, this is what happens all the time. He sits and says nothing. It's just like living with a wall." I said, "It sounds to me like you're feeling lonely and wanting more emotional contact with your husband." She said, "Yes." And I said, "I'm afraid that when you tell him things like, 'I feel like I'm living with a wall,' notice you're not expressing your feelings when you say that. You're making a diagnosis, and diagnoses like that often lead to self-fulfilling prophecies." When she expressed herself as I suggested she do, by telling her husband how she feels, she says, "I feel frustrated when I need contact with you, and I don't know what you're feeling. Would you be willing to learn how to express your feelings more openly?" When he heard that, the wall turned into a real human being and started to open up and say that he wants to do that, but he would need some help because he didn't have much experience with knowing how to express his feelings. The benefits of strengthening our feeling vocabulary is evident not only in intimate relationships, but also in the professional world. I was once hired to consult with the members of a technological department of a large Swiss corporation, troubled by the discovery that workers in other departments were avoiding them. When asked why, employees from other departments responded, "We hate going there to consult with those people. It's like talking to a bunch of machines." The problem abated when I spent time with the members of the technological department, encouraging them to express more of their humanness in their communications with coworkers. In another instance, I was working with the administrators of a hospital, who were anxious about a forthcoming meeting with the hospital's physicians. They wanted support for a project that the physicians had only recently turned down by a vote of 17-1. The administrators were eager to have me demonstrate how they might use nonviolent communication when approaching the physicians. Assuming the voice of an administrator in a role-playing session, I opened with, "I'm feeling frightened to be bringing up this issue." I chose to start this way because I sensed how frightened the administrators were as they prepared to confront the physicians. Before I could continue, however, one of the administrators stopped me to protest. "You can't say you're frightened in that way. You're being unrealistic. We could never say that." When I asked why an admission of fear seemed so impossible, he replied without hesitation. If we admitted we're frightened, they'd pick us to pieces. His answer didn't surprise me. I've often heard people say how they cannot imagine ever expressing feelings at their workplace. I was pleased to learn, however, that one of the administrators did decide to risk expressing his vulnerability at the dreaded meeting. Instead of his customary manner of appearing strictly logical, rational, and unemotional, he chose to state his feelings together with reasons for wanting the physicians to change their position. He noticed how differently the physicians responded to him. In the end, he was amazed and relieved when, instead of being picked to pieces, as he had expected might happen, they reversed their previous position, voting 17-1 now to support the project. This dramatic turnaround helped the administrators realize and appreciate the potential impact of expressing one's vulnerability, even in the workplace.